Just want to go back and first of all thank the teachers that have the young people. They decided to come into this class. We'll begin this particular lesson on the flood of Noah, lesson number 9. There's lots of information that we can learn. Of course, we understand that God's told us in His Word what He's done. But a lot of times when God does certain things, He leaves evidence. If we're talking about the flood, there should be evidence of a flood if it covered the whole world. We've looked at a little bit of that. We're going to look more as we go through the next few weeks. But in Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 20, it says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." There are certain things that people should be able to look at and say, yes, there is a God. We may not understand everything that God has done and God is doing and God will do. But just look at the universe that we live in. Tom and I was talking the other day. You just talk about the human body. And yet we're supposed to believe it just happened by accident. And not just one person, but you have male and you have female. Compatible. What's the odds of both of those happening at different times where they can reproduce? It's impossible. And that's just one thing. That should proclaim there is a God. There is a designer. There is a creator. And so as we study these lessons, we're not here to learn everything that God has in mind or to know everything that God has done, but to look at the evidence that God has given us. You know, when Jesus died on the cross, it was a physical event. There was evidence of that physical event. In Luke chapter 24, verses 36 through 40, "Now as they said these things, Jesus Himself stood in the midst of them, and He said, 'Peace to you.' But they were terrified and frightened, suppose they had seen a spirit. And He said to them, 'Why are you troubled? And why do doubts arise in your hearts? Behold My hands and My feet, that is, I Myself. Handle Me, see Me, for a spirit does not have flesh and bones as you see I have.' And when He had said this, He showed them His hands and His feet." He showed them evidence. Physical evidence. We don't have that physical evidence today because Jesus is going back into heaven. But He allowed the people then to see Him physically, that He had risen from the dead. And then, of course, we all know the story of what we call Doubting Thomas. In John chapter 20, verses 24 through 29. "Now Thomas, called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. The other disciples therefore said to Him, 'We have seen the Lord.' And He said to them, 'Unless I see His hands and the print of the nails, and put My finger into the print of the nails, and put My hand into His side, I will not believe.' And after 8 days, His disciples were again inside, and Thomas with them. And Jesus came, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst and said, 'Peace to you.' Then He said to Thomas, 'Reach your finger here and look at My hands, and reach your hand here and put it into My side. Do not be unbelieving, but believing.' And Thomas answered and said to Him, 'My Lord and My God.' And Jesus said to him, 'Thomas, because you have seen Me, you have believed. But blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe.'" So even on the cross, Jesus was proof. There's many other events that Jesus has used and or God has used in a physical way to do His will. creation being one of those. And we've talked about the design. We've looked at the logical aspects of creation. Just as we mentioned, even the human body itself. How could it accidentally happen? We looked at shrubbery that had been trimmed in the shape of elephants. And if you saw one of those out in the field, would you say, wow, isn't that amazing how that thing just grew by itself into the shape of an elephant? No. You'd say, well, who did that? You see a house built. Do you say, well, isn't that amazing how that thing just sprang up overnight? No. Who built it? Well, there's design, there's a designer, there's a builder. The universe is here. You and I are here. That proclaims God. Even though we may not understand everything there is to know about God, which we never will, but we know enough to believe. And so when it comes to things like the flood even, creation versus evolution, a lot of times we have questions. How does this all fit in? We're not going to be able to answer every question here. That's not the intent. But the purpose is to give us a firm foundation that we don't have to hang our heads and say the evolutionists have all the answers and the creationists don't. When you look at the things, especially as we're looking through the flood, it answers a lot of questions about the world in which we live. And in my opinion, it answers them a whole lot better than evolutionists. And again, we're going to look at some of this evidence in the next few weeks, a little bit closer. But anyway, I want to thank you for being here for a year, sticking with me. I see we've still got a little ways to go. Got a few more lessons in this lesson number 9 on the flood of Noah. Then we're going to talk about dinosaurs. And then we're going to talk about God's great universe. Last week, we looked at a video talking about the Ice Age. One of the things that resulted from the flood, and again, it answers how an ice age comes about better than the evolutionists do, was the flood. The flood reshaped the earth. Peter said that the old world was destroyed. It perished. The world before the flood was completely different than the world that we live in today. And immediately after the flood, it was even different than what it is today. We talked about the ice ages. And we're not saying that the whole world was frozen, but a good portion of it was. We mentioned that about 30% of the landmass was covered in ice. Today we have about 10% covered in ice. But what would cause that? Well, again, the evolutionists have some problems. They come up with a lot of different theories. But again, the flood does a good job of putting those pieces of the puzzle together. Here's a picture of the landmass that's covered in ice, this white part up here. And of course, Antarctica's down here. We don't have a picture of that, but of course it was covered in ice and still covered in ice. But you needed three things. You needed a lot of moisture, and you needed cold temperatures, and you needed cold temperatures for a long period of time. When the flood came, we know that it rained 40 days and 40 nights. The water came from above. The water came from beneath. A lot of eruptions of volcanoes around the world. And those eruptions, those volcanoes, did a couple of things. One, all of the ash and material that was put in the sky would block out the sun, cool down the temperatures. Also, the oceans would have been a lot warmer than what they are today because of all the lava, the eruptions. And so you had the warm oceans, which brings up the moisture. When it came down as snow in those regions where it was cold. And it did this for a period of a few hundred years. So the ice sheets kept building and building and building. After a while, the earth kind of settled down after this destruction of the world, the reshaping of the world. And warmth began to come back on the earth, and the ice began to melt. These are just some of the evidences that we see. There's no way that, you know, I'm going to say 100% of all of this is accurate. But again, the pieces fit together a lot better than what the evolutionists say. The flood disrupted this world, the environment, the atmosphere. Widespread volcanic eruptions around the world caused the oceans to heat up and the upper atmosphere to be filled with ash, causing the sunlight to be reflected back into space. This would cool down the temperature of the world. We had noted that there was different volcano eruptions even in last few hundred years, that they can record the temperature of the world, and the temperature goes down. So if you had this on a worldwide scale, you could see that the whole world would be cooled down. This would cause the earth to cool down, allowing vast sheets of ice to form over several years. As the volcanic activity slowed down, the ash in the atmosphere would be reduced, allowing more sunlight to hit the earth, therefore gradually warming it up, melting the ice, and raising the levels of the oceans. It appears that the weather after the flood was quite different than the weather before the flood. Bless you. As noted earlier, there is evidence to suggest that the climate around the whole globe was tropical. We'd mentioned this earlier. When God created Adam and Eve, he created them without any clothes. So was the temperature cold or hot? Hopefully it was plenty warm. But it appeared that this tropical environment was not just in the Garden of Eden, but it was a worldwide environment. And it probably continued up until the time of the flood. But how could this be? What would cause the climate of the whole world to be tropical? Well, one of the things that we can look to might give us a clue is found in Genesis chapter 1, verse 7. Thus God made the firmament, which is the land, divided the waters which were under the firmament above the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. Notice that, waters which were under the firmament and the waters which were above. We know that when God brought the flood, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. But he also broke loose the waters from below. And one way to break those apart is, again, volcanoes, earthquakes, breaking open the deep. There appears to have been large amounts of water below the earth as well as above the earth. The large amount of water above the earth formed a water barrier that caused a greenhouse effect, causing a tropical climate to exist all around the earth. You know, that's one of the things that scientists are concerned about today. Global warming. The sunlight, the heat gets trapped, can't escape. But it appears in the distant past, before the flood, that's exactly the way it was. The amount of water in the atmosphere before the flood would have been vastly larger than what we have in our atmosphere today. You know, when God brought the flood, it was a combination of miraculous events and physical events. And God could have allowed this to happen any way that he wanted to. He could have made rain if he wanted to. But we do know that it says there were vast amounts of moisture above, there was vast amounts of moisture below, and he could just as easily use what was already here. It is estimated that the volume of water in our atmosphere today at any given time is 3,100 cubic miles. Everybody sits there and says, okay, what does that mean? Well, it may sound like there's a lot of moisture, but it's not. It's only about 0.001% of the total Earth's water volume is in the atmosphere at any one time. If all the water in our atmosphere came down at once, it would only cover the Earth to a depth of about 1 inch. I just bring that up to show that there's a possibility that when God said he divided the waters from above and below, there was a lot more water in the atmosphere before the flood. And again, this would have caused the temperature of the earth to be warm all around. Before the flood, large amounts of water above the earth caused a greenhouse effect that trapped the heat from the sun in the upper atmosphere and caused the whole world to be tropical. Is there proof that this is what has happened in the past? Yes, there is. If all the earth had a tropical climate, there should be evidence of tropical plants and animals in all parts of the world. And that's exactly what we find. The flood caused the formation of many types of fossils of both plants and animals that are found all around the globe. One of the things that would cause fossils is what? A flood. When a plant withers and dies out in the sunshine, what happens? It decays. It blows away, dries up. If an animal just lays out here in the sunshine and dies, what happens? It decays. Other animals eat it. It doesn't become fossilized. So to become a fossil, plants and animals, takes a special event. They have to be covered up quickly. And one thing that can do that is a flood. And so we have fossils all around the world. And not just fossils, but fossils of plants and animals that lived in a tropical environment. Do we have a tropical environment around our world today? No. Parts of it is. Most of it is not. What is surprising for many is that the fossils of these tropical plants and animals are found on all 7 continents, including Antarctica. Why is Antarctica kind of a surprise? When you think, what is it? Kind of cold. Yeah, if you think of Antarctica, do you think of a tropical paradise? No. Today, Antarctica is not known for its tropical climate. In fact, the climate of Antarctica is the coldest on the Earth. The lowest recorded temperature was on July 21st, 1983, it was at -128.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Not really conducive to tropical plants and animal life. But at one time, Antarctica was tropical. Because it grew plants and dinosaurs. Would you expect to see lush vegetation and dinosaurs on Antarctica today? I hardly think so. The next few slides are going to show us the plants and animals that have been found in the Antarctic region. Here's a fossil of a plant that has been found in Antarctica. Does that look like a tropical plant? Yes, it does. It's a fossil from the Alexander Island in the Antarctic Peninsula. So this shows us that at some point in the past, Antarctica was not a sheet of ice. It was very warm and tropical. Here's another one. Palm trees lived along its shores. And what is that? It's a guy chiseling out, do I dare say, dinosaur bones? Antarctica. The scientists have found Titanosaurus bones in Antarctica for the first time in December the 20th, 2011. Sauropods include some 150 species whose remains have been found all around the world, but had never been found in Antarctica until now. Do you associate dinosaurs with cold climate or warm climate? Generally warm. Here's a museum skeleton of Titanosaurus. These are the same bones that they were chiseling out there in Antarctica. Notice the size of that thing. You see three people standing there below its tail. This thing was huge. And yet at one time, it lived in Antarctica. Here's another one. Antarctopella dinosaur. Says the bones of this dinosaur were discovered in Antarctica in 1986. It is called Antarctopella, meaning Antarctic shield. And it took scientists several years to collect all the bones because of the difficult weather. They had to go back in year after year after year because it was just a short period of time where they actually could work and dig up the bones. It says it was a medium-sized dinosaur, about 13 feet in length, and believed to be a plant eater. This one. In 1991, a research team found another dinosaur in Jurassic rock layer. Most of this specimen's bones were found together as they were in life. And about 7 feet away was a fossilized tree trunk. The dinosaur's name is Cryolophosaurus, which means cold-crested lizard. It was approximately 20 to 26 feet in length, a 5-foot tail, about 5 foot tall, and believed to be a meat eater. What's interesting about this, too, is not only did the dinosaur fossil was there, but what else was beside it? A fossilized tree trunk. How many trees do you see growing in Antarctica today? Antarctica was completely different at one time than what it is today. Here's an artist drawing of what they believe Antarctica looked like at one time. Is that how you would draw Antarctica today? Notice peeking out behind that tree. Yes. It's possible. You know, the continents, a lot of discussion about that. Was it just one huge landmass at one time? It's possible. Again, these are things that we're not going to get the answers to conclusively. But we do know that God did something. He destroyed mankind with a flood. How much that reshaped the earth, we don't know exactly. Is it possible that Antarctica could have been further north toward the equator? It's possible. But if that's the case, then all the land mass had to be right around the equator where it was tropical. But the other way to look at it is that the whole world was tropical, no matter where the land mass was. Again, because of the greenhouse effect. After the flood, the greenhouse effect went away. But we do know, as I said, all seven continents have tropical fossilized plants and dinosaurs. So when did this take place? When has the whole world been tropical? When did all of the continents have tropical plants and animals? It appears to be before the flood. And then the flood did away with all that. The world changed. If you go back and you looked, we've looked at the graph of the people that lived before the flood and how old they were. Did they live just a few hundred years or several hundred years? Several hundred years. Why? Well, one answer could be it was paradise before the flood. Remember, God created this world to be inhabited by mankind. It was a paradise. Eden was part of that, the Garden of Eden. God wanted the best for man. But man came along and destroyed it. So it seems to be that this paradise, earth, that God created, is what allowed these people before the flood to live longer. The environment was better. We're going to look at a few slides here that maybe even what they ate was even better. But after that flood, after God brought judgment down on mankind because they became so corrupt, it not only affected mankind, it affected the world. And as I said, we keep going back to what Peter said. The old world perished before the flood. What's he mean by that? Well, the earth is still here, but apparently what was on the earth was done away with. Changed drastically. But this is the old Antarctic. A tropical paradise. Ferns, palm trees, and dinosaurs require a warm tropical planet or tropical climate to survive. So it appears at one time Antarctica was not the cold, desolate place that it is now. In fact, the evidence shows us there's been a lush tropical forest at one time. In an article published on August 2, 2012 by Fox News, it stated, "The surprising discovery came from a study of drill cores obtained from the seafloor near Antarctica. The results published in the journal Nature show that warm ocean currents and high carbon dioxide, CO2 levels, in the air boosted temperatures, allowing tropical vegetation to grow where visitors today meet only icebergs and freezing cold." So the core samples they've taken through the earth show that at one time it was a lush tropical paradise. But notice that part right there. High carbon dioxide levels. What are we told about carbon dioxide today? Is it good or is it bad? We're told it's bad. That's why all of this global warming is brought up. We're destroying the planet. If the carbon dioxide levels get too high, we're all going to die. But historically speaking, carbon dioxide levels are very low in our world today. In times past, it's been a lot higher. Quite a bit higher. But mankind survived. We have been told that CO2 is bad for us and the environment, but is it? Of course, too much of anything is normally bad. But despite what the media says, we are far from having too much CO2 or carbon dioxide. I just want to mention this and kind of in passing, and the reason I do is because of the controversy that we have today. But the evidence shows that carbon dioxide, like I said, has been a lot higher than what it has been even present. And the results are not bad. Can you be surprised that you can't believe everything you read in the media? You know, I thought that this is terrible until you really get to start studying it. Literally thousands of laboratory and field experiments have conclusively demonstrated that enriching the air with carbon dioxide stimulates the growth and development of nearly all plants. They have also revealed that higher than normal CO2 concentrations dramatically enhance the efficiency with which plants utilize water, sometimes as much as doubling it in response to a doubling of the air's CO2 content. In fact, there are people who raise plants, and they have them in buildings, and in order to enhance their growth, they raise the CO2 limits inside that building, and the plants just flourish. They grow faster, they're healthier, they're larger, and even the nutrients inside of them are better. Raising atmospheric CO2 concentrations will indirectly benefit humans in a number of ways. Chief among these benefits is global food security. People must have sufficient food simply to sustain themselves, and the rise in the atmosphere's CO2 concentration has occurred since the inception of the Industrial Revolution has done wonders for humanity in this regard. And it will continue to work wonders in helping us meet the rising food consumption needs of a larger future population. These are the results of studies. People independent of politics. In addition to increasing the quantity of food available for human consumption, the rising atmospheric CO2 concentration is also increasing the quality of the foods that we eat. It significantly increases the quantity and potency of the many beneficial substances found in their tissues, such as the vitamin C concentration of citrus fruit, which ultimately make their way into our dinner tables and into many of the medicines that we take, improving our health and helping us better contend with the multitude of diseases and other maladies that regularly affect us. You know, we're often told we are what we eat. We need to eat good food. And I've also heard this all of my life, that the food that we eat today doesn't have as many nutrients and minerals as it did even a few hundred years ago. One, because we use fertilizers and so on. But it could be because of a lack of CO2. In just one species of spider lily, for example, enriching the air with CO2 has led to the production of higher concentrations of several substances that have been demonstrated to be effective in fighting a number of human maladies, including leukemia, ovary sarcoma, melanoma, brain, colon, lung, and renal cancers. I don't know about you, but I think it's kind of interesting. We talked about the atmosphere, the climate, maybe being different before the flood than what it was after, the reason that people lived long periods of time. Could it also have been that their food supply was a whole lot better than ours is today? Quite possible. It appears that high levels of CO2 that was prevalent before the flood helped plants to grow with more and better nutrients and in turn allowed animals and people to live better lives, and maybe even longer lives. Again, looking at the graph of the ages of people, it drops off dramatically after the flood. Why? These are some possibilities. I'm not saying that's the only thing. Possibility. And if you want to write down some of these websites, you can go there and read some of this information. And like I said, there's a lot of research being done right now on this. And as I mentioned, there are several places that are growing plants that do exactly this. They put CO2 in the environment to grow better plants, healthier plants, stronger plants. So yes, too much CO2 does do us in. But we haven't reached that level yet. We're not even close. And again, doing core samples, drill samples, they have shown that CO2 has been in a lot higher concentrations in the past than what it is now. Yes?
One worry is deforestation in the world, which you may get to. But the plants, as you find out, absorb CO2, but they exude a form of
oxygen.
And, isn't Brazil for rainforest, they're afraid it's helping to deplete the oxygen in their CO2, and if we get too much CO2, like people with COPD, it causes an acid-base imbalance in their blood and body, and that's a problem.
Isn't it amazing how animals, humans, need oxygen, and the plants need CO2, so we exhale CO2, the plants take it in, they produce oxygen. Huh. Kind of funny how that works, isn't it? Yeah, just a circle. Accident or design? We know it's design. Yes, there's some things we can do to hurt the environment. There's no doubt about that. We need to take care of the planet. God gave it to us. But I think sometimes, for whatever purpose, some people go overboard on that. But anyway, like I said, as I was studying for this lesson, I came across this. I debated whether to inject it or not, so I decided to inject it. If you want to use it, fine. If you don't, that's fine too. But I thought it was kind of interesting. And like I said, there are a lot of experiments going on right now showing that CO2 can be good. Again, you can have too much, as in anything. But we're far from being able to run the planet at this time with too much CO2. All right, let's move on. Because of large amounts of tropical plants that once grew in Antarctica, we now have vast deposits of coal found in the region. Remember that drawing or painting that somebody had of Antarctica and how lush it was? Well, what is coal made up of? Carbon, plants. If there was a worldwide flood, there should be coal all around the world. Plants, animals, covered up. If it wasn't fossilized, they could be compacted and form coal. And we're going to see a video on that either next week or the week after. Coal is formed when plants die and are buried before they can be completely decomposed. They are covered by other layers of sand and mud, which allows the hydrocarbons in the coal to be preserved for future generations to use. Again, this whole series of lessons is trying to compare what evolutionists say and looking at God's word and seeing how all this fits together and which one answers the questions the best. Well, when it comes to coal, you know, we've been told that animals and plants, like in a swamp, they die and they filter down to the bottom. And then something comes along and covers them up, and this happens over millions of years. The flood would do that in a short period of time. Coal was found all around the world, and Antarctica is no exception. Again, proof that at one time, Antarctica was not just a sheet of ice. It had life, abundant life. There's some of the coal veins in Antarctica. So going back to that artist drawing, he's probably pretty accurate. Lots of lush plant life that was covered, formed coal. Again, what would cause that to happen? The way the evolutionists say that something happened over millions of years? Or does the worldwide flood answer that question a lot better? The worldwide flood does exactly that. Any questions, comments?
Probably,
yes.
You know, if that's really the way the coal was formed and the oil was formed, but we don't have any scientific proof of any scientist that's ever done it. You know, they've never made a drop of oil or in any coal that I'm aware of.
They have in labs.
They have in labs?
Uh-huh. And, as I said, this video we're going to see either next week or the week after, it's going to discuss this a little bit. It's going to show you that the evolutionist side and the creationist side. And again, which one puts the puzzle together the best? And, of course, the creationist side, God's side does, yes.
When do you think what happened?
Do what?
Mm-hmm. There's an area out there where they found definitely creatures that came out of the sea. Mm-hmm. The way they came out of the Hardin River. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that actually happened?
Well, we had a graph we looked at. You know, God gives us a timeline. He tells us that He created Adam, and then we have the lineage from Adam to Jesus. He gives us the age of the father when the son was born. Adam was 130 years old when Seth was born. And then we're told how old Seth was when his son was born. So if you add all them up and you get to Noah, it appears that the flood was around 1,656 years after creation.
Almost the same time Methuselah died.
Same year Methuselah died. Whether Methuselah died before the flood or whether Methuselah died in the flood, we don't know. But the same year Methuselah died. And then, I forgot how many years it was. I'm wanting to say like 300 years when Abraham was born after that. We were talking about the age of the earth being about 6,000 years old. We know that from now back to Jesus was approximately 200 years. Historically speaking, we can go to Jesus back to Abraham, which is about another 2,000 years. And if it was 1,656 years from creation to the time of Noah, and from Noah to Abraham was about 200 to 300 years, that's another 2,000 years. The earth was about 6,000 years old. So when we look at these events that we're seeing in geology like this, What best describes when this could have happened? The flood. The animals were there. The plants were there. They were covered up somehow and formed coal and oil. So when were they covered up? Again, go back to what God said in Genesis 6. He flooded the whole world. He reshaped the world. The world changed. This is the evidence of that, in my opinion. It shows us the power and the glory of God. But it also shows us the justice of God. He wants the best for us. He created us. He made a world that was perfect. We messed it up. But He is building even a better place for us in heaven. So we have to be prepared to go there. And so even though He destroyed the whole world, save 8 souls in the flood, He gave us another chance as mankind, humankind. We are the result of that. Are we taking advantage of that chance? That's a question each one of us has to answer. There is going to be another judgment. He's promised that. This time, the whole world is going to be destroyed. It's not going to be reshaped. It's not going to be redone. It's going to be gone. And then comes judgment. When's that going to be? We don't know. We just know we have to be ready when that time comes. Thank you for your time, your comments. We'll continue on next week, Lord willing. Let's have a prayer before we go. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank You for this beautiful day that You've given us. We pray that You be with those who are not able to be here, whether it be physical or spiritual, that You can take care of their needs and they can be looking to You for comforts and guidance. Pray be with us as we go through our life that we know that You are in control of everything, that You are the mighty Creator, and that You will one day be judging the world. We'll be judged for our actions. May we be doing those things that You would have us to do so that we can walk in the light and one day be with You in heaven. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.